Welcome to Veterinary Advice, Animal News, and Views, the place for pets and the people who love them.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Here are your hosts, practicing veterinarians Dr. Roger Welton and Dr. Karen Lewis.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Veterinary Advice, Animal News, and Views. I'd like to welcome my co-host, Dr. Karen Lewis, known by you guys as Dr. Karen. Hello, Karen.
Hey, Dr. Roger. How's it going? Long time, no talk.
It has been a long time, and there's various reasons for that. Before we get into that, my name is Dr. Roger Welton. Most of you call me Dr. Roger, and I welcome you all to the program. We've had a tough time connecting, Dr. Karen, between your oral surgery, epic trips to Europe, and me losing my voice because I'm a maniacal lacrosse coach.
So, and then I lost my voice before you lost your voice too. So yeah, it's been rough.
Right. So anyway, nice to reconnect. Loved your article about chemotherapy in dogs. Before you run away at the hearing of chemotherapy, I would really implore you to stick around because it's not as evil as many people are led to believe per Dr. Karen's article. Both of us have experience with administration of chemotherapy. And Dr. Karen, I think one of your biggest points is, theme of the article, the goals are different to begin with, right?
Right.
And with the difference of the goals comes a difference in the outcome. And I guess we can get into that a little bit as we go on here. Thoughts on that real quick before we jump into our mail?
Yeah, the difference in the goals totally dictates the difference in treatment and all the other differences that follow. So, yeah, we'll definitely go into detail on that. This is how we build suspense.
Yes. So stick around. This is very interesting. So we're going to learn about different goals. And because of the different goals, different, I guess, less evilness to it. And it's something that maybe worth taking a look at if you have a pet living with cancer. So we have mail tonight, Dr. Karen. I'm rather excited about that.
I know, we're way too easily excited, by the way, when we get mail, but yes, it's true.
You know what? It shows that at least one person's listening.
Yes.
a lovely one here too. This is sent in by Giovanna from California. And shall I read it?
Do you want to do the cliff notes, or do you want to read?
It is a rather involved one, so I'll just read as quickly as possible. How's that?
Okay. I can cliff note it for you.
Okay, here we go. Hello, Dr. Roger. My name is Giovanna, and I live in California. Establish that. First of all, I'd like to thank you for all the information you share through your website and podcast. I always listen to it on my way to work, and I've been learning a lot. By the way, the traffic, Dr. Karen, in California, I understand is terrible. So that's probably what gives her the time to listen to us, which is wonderful.
I think it's because she's listened to every other podcast out there, and
right,
she ran out.
Yes. So hey, let me check out what Dr. Karen and Roger are talking about. I always listen to it on my way to work, and I've been learning a lot. I also laugh a lot, ready for this, when Dr. Karen is with you. She is awesome.
Yay.
Pardon me
you
for the grammar mistakes. I am Brazilian, and English is my second language. Before I go on here, Giovanna, you're – diction and grammar is better than a lot of Americans that I'm friends with on Facebook. So kudos to you. I have a couple of questions for you. A couple of years ago, my sister and I came across a problem with the pet overpopulation here in the United States, and we decided to do our part to help. We started by fostering dogs for other rescue groups, and after a while, we were able to start our own not-for-profit organization. It is called Add to Your Family Adopt. The experience of being able to help helpless animals is priceless, although it's very difficult to deal with and the drama that comes with it. But anyway, we daily have to deal with many common problems in dogs like kennel cough, internal and external parasite infestations, viruses, and so on. Recently, there was one case of a dog that came to our rescue group that I cannot stop thinking about. The girl called our group and was trying to find a home for a puppy that she had bought from the border with San Diego and Tijuana, Mexico. It was a tiny little teacup chihuahua that was about 2 or 3 months old. I'm getting some cue cards from my co-host here. She had the best intentions to save that puppy from the people that were recklessly selling it for a couple of bucks. She was told that the puppy had had shots and was healthy. However, she didn't believe them and took the puppy to her vet to get the shots anyway. The vet gave her one round of the core vaccines, and he also noticed that the dog had a tick. They decided to do a stool test and found out she had coccidia. He prescribed two different medicines to treat it, and for 6 days, the little puppy was fine. All she had was a not-so-solid stool, but not quite liquid feces. She was active, eating and drinking normally. On the seventh day, she started vomiting and having diarrhea. She was not eating and rapidly became lethargic and weak. She was then taken to the same veterinarian, and this time I went there with the girl. The veterinarian said that he would check her for parvo, and I said, what? Nobody tested the puppy for parvo, but she came from Tijuana. I thought to myself, oh my, the puppy has parvo. The test came positive, and I was just hopeless at that point. She was then hospitalized, and I asked the vet to make sure she would be isolated since we had another case, which one of our rescued puppies that was under treatment for parvo got distemper while staying at another hospital. They said that they would do the best that they could for her. Unfortunately, the puppy survived only 2 days and came to obit. In the same week, I listened to one of your podcasts where you said the parvovirus, when acquired, stays hiding in the system for a couple of days until the dog first starts showing symptoms. I have very little knowledge of veterinary medicine, and I'm only a rescuer, but I started questioning the possibility that the puppy acquired the virus from the shot. I am probably wrong, but since she was in really bad condition in Tijuana and probably deprived nursing at an early age, had coccidia, probably didn't get enough nutrients and strength to combat anything that attacked her little system, she coincidentally started showing symptoms of parvo 6 days after having the shot. I wonder, Dr. Roger, if it is possible that she contracted the virus from the vaccine, or she had it hiding in her system since day one. She was only 1 pound and 8 ounces. Was the doctor wrong about giving her shots when she was so small and had coccidia? Was he wrong about not testing for parvo on day one? I really think he was. Everybody knows that Tijuana pups are often sick pups. Would we have had more chances of saving her if she was tested earlier? Should all the dogs that don't come from the shelter and come to our rescue group be checked for parvo no matter what? Please, Dr. Roger, let me know what your thoughts are. Thank you very, very much. Would you like to jump in here, Dr. Karen? I'm tired of talking. thank you, by the way, Giovanna, for a very, very well-detailed history here. But I'm going to give my voice a break for a moment.
Yeah, you talk too much. I need to give it a break.
I do.
So anyway, there was two problems this dog had right off the bat that she nailed. And one of them was it was a teacup chihuahua. There is no such thing as a teacup anything, okay? So if anyone's calling it a teacup, first of all, A, they're a bad breeder and should not be allowed to ever breed because they're taking runts and breeding them together and then wondering why they're full of health problems. Oh, gee, I can't imagine why. So, and then she said it was like 1.8 pounds, so obviously the deck was stacked against it. Also, it was in pretty rough shape. I'm sure it might have had more going on than even coccidia, you know? So, when you get puppies like that, it's rough. And if they would have parvo tested in the same day, the day they got it, it would have been negative. So I really don't think that that did anything wrong. I mean, it was smart to, if you know this puppy is probably sick, maybe get a vaccine in it ASAP because, again, you hit the nail on the head about it probably didn't nurse from its mom. It probably didn't get that maternal immunity. So maybe get a shot in it to give it some prayer. And you don't know if it's incubating parvo or not. It can take up to 10 days from the time parvo meets the dog till the time parvo shows symptoms. So 6 days, is within that range. It's not the shot, unfortunately. I wish I could say it was something that simple. It probably was trying to fight off the parvo as well as it could and finally showed symptoms. Sometimes I've even had dogs who are showing symptoms of parvo. We do a parvo test and it's negative just because it takes time for them to have enough extra virus to shed it in their feces. And that's what the parvo test usually is. So yeah, parvo testing puppies right off the bat when you first get them, it's not a good use of, first of all, limited funds that rescues have. I mean, I don't know how much they usually run about $50 a pop. I'm sure you get a discount, but they're not cheap and they're not going to be useful because you can even have a sick puppy where you get a false negative. So, and then I think even worse, you'll get a false sense of security because you're like, hey, the parvo test was negative. It can't be parvo, where it still very well could be. So, yeah, I mean, I think kudos to her for trying to rescue a dog and trying to save a life. And I'm sorry it didn't turn out good. One thing I tell people, too, and I don't know, Dr. Roger, if you had this experience, but maybe I'm just bitter because I see so much parvo. But when I have a parvo puppy brought to me in a clinic, I look at the people and I tell them, okay, right now it is in the cards if this puppy lives or dies. I have had people go to specialists, $5,000, 3 plasma transfusions later, the dog still dies. I have had people take the puppy home, through some miracle, feed it Pedialyte with a turkey baster, give it a couple antibiotics I give it with on a prayer, and it lives.
That's so, usually the pit bulls that survive those.
Yeah, I know. Right. And so, and it's just like, you know, so, I mean, Parvo, I give up trying to predict it anymore, and I tell people that. I'm like, you know, if its immune system and its body is going to meet us halfway, then great. Some do, some don't, and we don't know which one that is. Like I said, the puppy who was in the specialty hospital critical care for 2 weeks and got 3 plasma transfusions and still died, I'm like, there was no expense spared. Nothing was spared. I mean, talk about frustrating for those owners. But, yeah, so, I mean, I think just kudos to you. But like I said, it was a teacup. It was a chihuahua. It was sick to begin with. I'm not sure you had a prayer from the beginning, given all that was already inside the puppy that you didn't even know about, you know, until it showed up later. So, unfortunately, yeah, I mean, I think your vet did everything reasonable. I wouldn't complain. I don't know. Dr. Roger, do you have anything to add to that?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And you know, beyond that, like you said, up to 10-day incubation period for Parvo. So we know that when we give a vaccine, that immunity is not imparted right away, right? It can take as long as 2 weeks to amount that full immune response for protection against the virus.
And the parvovirus has to be boosted too.
It has to be boosted. Yeah. So double whammo, right? So we have a juvenile immune system, probably a deficient immune system because it's a runt of a runt of a runt of a runt. Mm-hmm. 1 pound 8 ounce dog is 2 to 3 months old. That's tiny. It's like gerbil size. you know, so you have that. And also I'm glad Giovanna brought up the notion of the shot giving the disease. The disease was contracted despite the shot, not because of it. When we're giving vaccines, we're either giving modified live vaccine, so it is a modified version of the virus that antigenically, meaning recognized by the immune system as the virus, so it imparts protective immunity and antibodies against that particular real virus because it's close enough. But I think you said the best term, Dr. Karen, when you said, we've clipped its wings, that it cannot flourish in the body. It can only stimulate an immune response. We looked up before this, because we wanted to answer this accurately. Actually, Dr. Karen's a house call vet, so she very conveniently had our favorite vaccines right in her fridge. How lovely. And so you were able to look up, and they were modified. The Novavax is modified live, and the PureVax for the cats modified live? Okay.
I think most of them are, except I think rabies by law has to be killed.
Right.
So that will always be a killed vaccine. But the other ones are the viruses who have had their flight feathers clipped and can't do anything.
And I think the fact that rabies has to be killed, I think in part is because of that fear that, you know, we could give them rabies, right? But it's not a real fear. It's not a real concern. I've never seen an animal get a disease from a vaccine I gave it.
And the reason the rabies vaccine has to be killed versus the other vaccines is because rabies is the only vaccine that is zoonotic, meaning people can get it.
Right.
People can't get parvo. So there's, with rabies, anything.
Well, we have our own parvo. We're not going to get canine parvo.
Well, right. Yeah. but there's always government and laws involved. And so somewhere along the line, they decided that the killed vaccine, because people, I guess if you're a spaz and you would stab yourself in the finger or something, you know, they didn't want it. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I mean, I fit more euthanasia solution to my thumb. So it explains a lot, maybe, but no, but anyway, so it's more, I think, legalness than medicine deciding that, but yeah, no. And it's kind of like in humans, people say, oh, I went and got my flu shot and then I got the flu.
Right.
It's like, well, you actually didn't get the flu. You know, the flu shot might've distracted your immune system temporarily if you were fighting off something. Vaccines can do that, unfortunately. That's why we want to vaccinate, ideally, an animal who is somewhat healthy, although when I get a puppy who has parasites, I'm not going to skip the vaccine because almost all puppies have parasites, you know.
Right. I agree.
To a certain extent. but um, But because it is a little bit of a distraction for the immune system. So if you are trying to fight off a cold and you go and get your flu shot, your immune system, who is focusing on the cold, says, ooh, what's this? Because your immune system doesn't multitask very well. And then it goes, oh, flu shot, we're going to do that. And ignores the cold, and the cold takes off. So it's not the flu. It's whatever you're fighting off before. Hopefully that the flakiness of your immune system makes sense.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. And so I agree with all that. And Giovanna, I would continue to have faith in this veterinarian. I don't see any breach of protocol here. This puppy really had the cards stacked against him or her.
I don't know. I don't think she ever said. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm sorry for your loss, and kudos to you for trying, and keep up the good work. And please do keep communicating with us. That was a really nice contribution to the program. So tonight we're talking about chemotherapy, Dr. Karen. Since it was your article that was the inspiration for this episode, why don't you weigh in here? Let's talk about chemotherapy in pets.
So I mentioned before in our teaser, our suspense building, how the goals are different. And I don't know if you've read the article, a lot of this you might already know, but if you've ever, I don't know, Dr. Roger, have you ever had a family member go through chemo? Have you ever experienced that firsthand in a person?
Yes, it's hideous.
It's awful.
Yeah.
And it made me if I get cancer, F it. Let the cancer kill me. I'm vomiting my lungs out for 3 days in a row every week is not my idea of a good time.
Anemic, and losing your hair, just
frailty.
I
mean, it's awful.
Yeah.
And I have a friend who just finished her sixth and final round for breast cancer. And we were worried it was awful. So,
yeah.
And that's actually what inspired me, was watching her go through this horrible chemo. And I was like, why are we so awful to people? And we're so good to our pets.
Right.
Because chemotherapy in pets is nothing like that at all. And the main reason being, well, there's a couple. First of all, the different goals, like we kind of mentioned before. No matter what we do, your boxer is not going to live to be 50. I don't care what vet you have and what food you feed it. Okay. In people, my friend is in her early 50s. The goal is for her to live 30 more years. Kill the cancer, have a really crappy year, but then you get 30 more good years with no cancer. That's kind of the goal. And dogs, first of all, we can't explain to them why they feel so crappy, so we're not going to make them feel crappy. We're going to make them feel good. And our goal is to maybe not eradicate the cancer totally, because they're not going to live 30 more years no matter what. They might live a few, just because of the normal lifespan of dogs. But we want those to be good years. And so humans focus more on quantity, while veterinarians focus more on quality of life. So we typically, the doses of chemo drug are lower. If there are bad side effects, if your dog does vomit, have diarrhea, guess what? We might not use that drug again. Or we might reduce the dose by 25%. Or, we play with it. We're not, in human medicine, you say, I threw up for 5 days solid. They say, oh, sucks to be you. Here's your dose again, where in veterinary medicine, we say, oh, wow, you had a really bad side effect. Okay, well, let's change this up, because that's not what we want for your pet.
Or even stop altogether.
Oh, yeah. Mm. And, I've had some dogs who, and some owners are like, you know what? I thought I wanted to do chemo, or they got a fabulous response after the first month. Why? I don't want to do the other 5 months of this 6 month protocol.
Right.
My dog feels great. I want to leave well enough alone. And it's everybody's choice. I tell people it's chemo. It's not a cell phone plan. So once you start, you're not committed. You can, change your mind, back out. The dog might change its mind for us, if he has decided, so it's very flexible. And a lot of vets who do chemo, who I used to be one of them. I think you were too, Dr. Roger.
Yeah. 3 years of it.
Yeah. So, it's a lot of us get that, and it's not just a press on through. So, but I'm doing a talk about what side effects that we do see specifically. Yeah. You mentioned it before, Dr. Roger, the anemia and the low white blood cell count and things like that.
Yeah, so let's discuss, what is anemia? A lot of people hear that term. They know it's something that's bad. They don't know exactly what anemia means. So anemia is low red blood cell count. Red blood cells are very important. It's what makes our blood red, and that's what actually picks up oxygen in our lungs and carries it out to our tissues to make sure that we remain oxygenated. So when anemia occurs, the red blood cell count is low because the bone marrow is getting suppressed by the chemotherapy, potentially. Chemotherapy generally works by suppressing rapidly producing cellular structures. And so that's what tumors are. So you're going to suppress the growth of the tumor, but you're also going to suppress other rapidly growing cells in the body, which would be bone marrow. And then the white blood cells come into that equation as well, because white blood cells are created by the bone marrow, as are the red blood cells, but also the gastrointestinal system. It's constantly replicating and renewing itself, and that's why the GI sickness comes in. And then, of course, the hair will sometimes fall out, more so in people because we're not using such cytotoxic doses like you mentioned in the dogs and cats. So you don't really see the hair loss. I do see coat changes. You ever notice that? Like, they're suddenly not a wire-haired dog. They're a smooth-haired dog now, but, you know, they're not bald. So those are really the three main considerations: the bone marrow, the GI, and occasionally the hair. But and so what do you feel from anemia? You feel weakness. Have you ever been anemic, Dr. Karen?
Personally, no. And I'm actually a vegetarian, which all my doctors are always like, let's check you for anemia every year. Yeah. And every year I'm totally fine. And I'm like, meh, so no.
Yeah.
I just like to rub that in their face.
So much for that, right?
Yes.
My sister gets it occasionally. And it's genetic. My mom was the same way, and so she has to take iron supplements and what have you at times. But they just feel this general malaise. They feel like getting up is hard. You know, it's just – it's tough. You feel just like you're kind of in a daze.
It's like you just ran a marathon.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, 'cause you're oxygen deprived, basically. So that's the anemia. Sometimes it can get so severe that it's like life-threatening. Because if your body is deprived of oxygen to a certain degree, it can be life-threatening. And then the white blood cells, that's our first line of defense against infection. So, you know, when that gets low, that can predispose us to infection. So, you know, that's the general consideration. One of the big things we monitor is the CBC, the complete blood count. In your experience with the chemos, did you commonly see anemia?
I don't see anemia as much.
Leukopenia would be the low white blood cells?
Yeah, I see more low white blood cells. And when we have low white blood cells, there are certain criteria, depending on which chemotherapy agent, which protocol you're using. But you'll have certain cutoffs. Like if you have less than 1,000 of one kind of white blood cell called a neutrophil, or less than 3,000 of your total white blood cells, you postpone chemo for a week. Ooh. And the thing is, these are all numbers that we're looking at. The dog or cat feels fine.
Right.
You know, I mean, they don't know their white blood cell count is low. Now, it might make them more prone to infection, which is why we're, you know, postponing the chemo so they don't get lower. But, I mean, these are dogs who, you know, if the kennel down the street has kennel cough, maybe don't take them there. Although, I wouldn't take my healthy dog there, you know, but you don't want to knowingly expose them to things. But, and the other side effect you mentioned, the hair loss, The dogs that they, and I've never personally seen this, I don't know if you have, but the dogs they say who will actually get hair loss are the ones whose hair is growing all the time. Like your frou-frou dogs, your Malteses, your Shih Tzus, the ones who have to get their fur trimmed all the time because they're in a constant state of, oh shoot, I forget if it's anagen or telogen, but one of those hair growing states.
Oh, you're using vegetable words.
Yes, I think I'm trying to sound smart. I'm not pulling it off very well. But no, I think telogen, or I might have it backwards, but I think telogen is when the hair is growing and anagen is when it's resting. And a short-coated dog like a boxer or a lab, that hair isn't always growing, so it's not going to be attacked by the chemo and not fall out, where your Maltese, whose hair grows, they say, like, our human hair grows and never stops. They might actually lose hair. But I've actually done chemo on Malteses and they didn't lose the hair. And I even prepared the owner for it and they didn't. So have you ever had a dog like that lose its hair?
Never had a dog. This is crazy because I did a lot of chemotherapy when I was in my practice in New York, treated a lot of lymphoma cases.
And that
one responds so well.
Lymphoma is so wimpy. Yeah. Do the chemo on lymphoma.
Oh absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, but I saw the worst I ever saw was a Scottish Terrier. Its coat became just very fine and soft and cottony, very un-Scotty-like. and the owner actually liked it. You know, but I never actually saw outright alopecia, like clumps of hair falling out.
Yeah.
Never, ever once saw that.
Yeah, me neither. But I do see, because, okay, when we're doing frequent IVs, we have to clip the leg, you know, clip the hair on the leg. And I do find that the hair doesn't grow back very well.
Oh, yeah.
So one client called it his bracelets. Which I thought was cute, because when you do it, depending on which protocol you're doing and how often you're doing it, I mean, some are weekly, and you got four legs and you rotate them. You don't do the same vein over and over, you know, so all four legs are shaved. And she's like, oh, well, you have to keep his bracelets even. So we'd actually shave all of his legs to keep them even. Just because trying to make him look cute.
Symmetry is a good thing.
You do what you got to do. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is you develop this relationship with your chemotherapy patients where, because you see them so often, and the owners come in and they're, you know, you're laughing. It's pleasant. The IV is no big deal. It runs. The fluids run in with it. It's a happy occasion. You know, for all intents and purposes, it's not this, you know, gloomy, doomy, horrible branch of medicine that it can be with people. Now, granted, eventually you're going to lose that patient, and sometimes you lose them sooner rather than later. Are you up on the latest mean remission rates for lymphoma, by the way, the WMPI cancer?
I know it depends on if it's B cell or T cell. Yeah. So I don't know remissions for each one, no.
So the multicentric variety. And I haven't done chemos in a while. I refer them out because my intention was to do them when I took over my current clinic. But people in this area weren't quite like the people in Long Island, New York, on the North Shore that were, you know, had the financial capacity to always just go for it. Hey, why not? I'm going to get a 13 to 18 month remission. Hell yes, I'll take that time with my dog. Well, here they're a little more reticent. And maybe that's changed because the whole demographic of this area has changed. There's a lot of transplants like me here. So, you know, I wonder if there might be a time where I get back into it. But, you know, those drugs are very expensive and have them expire on the shelf just didn't make business sense. So I just refer them out. But there's a phenomenal center in Orlando, which is not far from where I practice. It's about an hour east. I'm sorry. I'm an hour east. An hour west, and it's called Affiliated Veterinary Specialists. I mean, they have residents, interns. It's just one of those huge referral centers, and they actually do the Wisconsin Protocol, which you're probably familiar with. It's very,
that's what I used. Yeah,
it's an oldie but goodie. It's phenomenal, but they found that they're achieving remission rates well beyond 2 years with combining that with full body radiation. Which really surprised me, but they could do a full body radiation all in one day. They radiate the whole body, which,
oh my God, I've never heard of that.
It sounds awful, but they did it in a Beagle patient of mine, and she had a particularly aggressive form of lymphoma. She contracted it at only 3.5 years old.
Oh,
and
geez.
it was a young couple, and this was their baby. You know, they hadn't had children, and this was their firstborn, so to speak. That, can you believe that dog lived 4.5 years longer with the protocol that they were using, and she lived with very good quality. And, you know, she would come in for her yearly visits with me, and, you know, it was just amazing what was accomplished with this particular dog, you know, 4+ year remission. That's just amazing. And so, but the last statistic I saw was we're looking at somewhere between 13 and 18 months remission. And that's kind of your mean sort of, remission rate with multicentric lymphoma. And I forget if it's T cell versus B cell versus what have you. It's been a while. But I mean, I put my money where my mouth is because I had my own dog, Labrador Retriever. She was my first dog that was my own dog, not the family dog. Like, mm-hmm. It was Tiffany. And my wife used to joke when we were engaged and Tiffany was brought in the relationship. She's like, you know, she used to tell people, if it was between me and the dog, I'd be packing my bags. I was just mental over this dog. I loved her so much. She's a wonderful animal, and she was mine. And, you know, my education took me all over the world, not just other places. I mean, I left the country with this dog to start at Ross University, took her to Illinois with me, and she just followed me everywhere. She meant the freaking world to me. And so when she got lymphoma at 8.5 years old, I was like, damn straight I'm treating this, because I had experience with it anyway.
Oh, heck yeah.
My experience is good. And she went into complete remission. It's amazing what happens. You have that first treatment. The lymph nodes are all huge, right? And like one day later, they're all normal.
Oh, I know. That first treatment is – well, and the thing is, and not all chemo is expensive. Because, like, for example, with lymphoma, you do a variety of kind of alternating three – well, you start out with one unique drug, and then you go to kind of alternating cyclically three different drugs. Right. And some of those – like, the shot was like $50 right here in Illinois, you know? I mean, it wasn't – the first one, the Elspar, is like a $400 shot. But it varies. And it's nice because every week it's a different shot. Yeah. And it's kind of – it makes people able to afford it because you're not paying $3,000 up front for a for like a knee surgery. You know, every couple weeks you're paying for a CBC. You're paying for the, you know, but it never like hits you hard.
Right.
So that's what I love about it. But I got to tell you, I had a two patients that I remember off the top of my head that I had treated for lymphoma with the same medicine, Wisconsin protocol. One, he actually had two kinds of cancer. He had lymphoma and he had mast cell cancer.
Oh, goodness.
I was like, well, So I spoke with an oncologist. She said, just do medicine, Wisconsin. I did the protocal. The mast cell cancer went away, too. Wow. I was like, oh, okay, bonus. So we just kind of went with it. So dog lived 10 months. He was pretty much going to die, like, within weeks if we didn't do anything. He came in pretty bad. And he had 9-10 good months. You know, they weren't months of diarrhea and vomiting. They were months of, hey, he needs to stop chasing the cat, you know, because he feels good. And the other really noteworthy lymphoma patient I remember, her name was Squeaky. I surgically removed her massive lymph node that was like a football. And thank God it was just one lymph node. It hadn't spread to the other ones. And we did, I think, the first 3 weeks of the Medicine Wisconsin protocol, which are the most aggressive.
Right.
Never heard from the owner again. Okay. I mean, she was doing great, but you know, stuff happens. People lose jobs. People get divorced, whatever, you know, not my business. I was like, that's cool. I just figured Squeaky, you know, eventually passed away or something. So imagine my surprise when two or three years later, she came in for her rabies shot. I was like, what?
Yeah.
What? You're here. You didn't finish. Oh. And she's like, oh, that chemo worked great. Yeah.
Wow.
Jeez. I was like, oh my God. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So. Those defy nature. You know, it's like, yeah. I love when I'm proved wrong on those, you know, the other consideration, you know, about your article is chemotherapy right for your dog or cat with cancer? You know, and I think in some cases it really doesn't make sense. So let's look at, for example, what's the number one cancer you see in golden retrievers?
Oh yeah. Any kind of hemangiosarcoma. It can be on their spleen, it can be on their heart. I've had it in their skin.
Yeah.
They love it.
They love it.
And it responds to chemo like crap.
Like crap. So you ever get the cases where there's some cases where the dog just kinda ain't doing right, we call it ADR, comes in, you palpate this big mass on the spleen. Could be a hematoma, could be a tumor, a hemangiosarcoma. Hematoma, if you remove it, they live happily ever after. Life is good. If it's a hemangiosarcoma, life is not so good. So what you do is a metastatic check. You take chest x-rays. You do abdominal ultrasound to see if you see any gross mets anywhere else in the body. If you don't, you go for it. Take out the spleen. Everything else looks perfect. Dog recovers very well. And the diagnosis comes back, hemangiosarcoma, right? So here's your choice as a pet owner. You can let your dog live out its life, which statistically is going to be another 6 months without gross mets. Or you can refer them for chemotherapy, which will increase their life expectancy to 9 months. So does that make sense? What do you think?
Actually, I have a friend who actually did, it was a German Shepherd. She's a very good friend of mine, and she is a veterinarian. Mm-hmm. And she actually did the chemo herself on her dog, did the full course. Her dog lived 9 months. She did it because she was losing her mother at the same time, and she said, I'm not losing my mother and my dog at the same time.
Right.
So dog is getting chemo. So people have reasons. And
yes.
And she had fantastic months. But I tell people, I'm like, would I put my dog through chemo for 3 flipping months? You know, I mean, some things. And also, I think my biggest thing is you need to think about your animal's personality. If it's a dog who loves going to the vet, loves people messing with it, doesn't mind getting IVs, then by God, you know, then that's right for your dog. Cats who you get out the cat carrier and they hide and you're dragging them out from under the bed, stuffing them in a carrier, they're hissing and hating life the whole time you're doing the chemo. You know, is your cat really having a good life? You know, if you're having to do this all the time. So, and I tell people this too. I'm like, think about it's a lot of vet visits between the blood draws and the chemo. And if your pet is one who just hates the vet hospital, is throwing up in the car, peeing on itself in the car just because it hates the car, you know, it's not for everybody.
Right.
And that's okay.
There I don't think it's for most cats, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
Even the most docile, sweet cats. They hate the veterinary visits.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And so, and I do have some cats who we do oral chemo on, which is a whole different animal, right, you know, because in a house call setting, I'll come to the house, I'll draw their blood, we'll prescribe the oral chemo, and that works fantastic, you know, because it's not the going to the vet and getting the IVs. I will tell you, I had a patient, I forget the kind of, it was years ago, she went through chemotherapy, it was a cat, the cat through two rounds of chemo, one round of chemo and went into remission. Cancer came back, did a second round. The cat was like Miracle Cat. I don't even know the thousands of dollars she went to a specialist for this. The woman spent on this cat. One day, an indoor only cat, one day ran out the open door and got hit by a car.
Oh my goodness.
She killed herself, the owner says, because she was tired of all the chemo.
Wow.
So,
well,
see, chemo makes cats suicidal.
It could. Apparently.
You had a fantastic attitude about it. I was much more upset than she was, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I have three cats. I love my cats. I would not put them through chemotherapy. And two of them are Devons. Those are, they're called house squirrels. I mean, Devon Rex cats, you could throw them over your shoulder. But, you know, you try to put an IV in them, not so good. They don't like restraint. They love to be thrown around by my kids. That's fine, but don't pin me down and try to put an IV in me. It's just, I don't know. I don't think it's a good quality, but that's my opinion as a pet owner, you know, so I'm not trying to criticize anyone who do chemo for their cats. Just know your pet and know if it's something that is right for their existence, you know, to go through for potentially a long time, depending on the cancer.
And it depends on the protocol. You're right. Because like, oh my gosh, like there's a new, well, it used to be new. It's not new anymore, but the melanoma vaccine for oral melanoma in dogs.
Yes. Looks promising.
Oh my gosh. Oral melanoma used to be a death sentence.
A rapid one.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, and it sometimes metastasizes, but sometimes often it's just so aggressive in their mouth that you have a dog who can't eat and their mouth is like rotting off. I mean, this sucker is nasty.
It's awful.
So they came out with they call it a vaccine because it actually stimulates your immune system to kill the cancer. I think they get two or three doses. It's not many.
Right.
And they're done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, and they're done. I mean, like, they don't have cancer again. Go off into the sunset. You know, I mean, it's amazing. So, for something like that, for three treatments, and your dog's done, heck yeah. You know, I mean.
I would absolutely agree. And it's not cheap, but it's, and I think we're looking at like 1 year remission rates, which for, you know.
These are old dogs who get this. So you're talking about, you know, a 10-year-old German Shepherd. So, hey. Versus living a month, he'll live a year or two. I've seen him
over
live
three
longer.
Injections. Right?
Yeah,
three, and they go sub Q, don't they?
Yeah,
they
it's not even an IV. Yeah,
not even painful. And then there's other circumstances. So you look at, I'm sure you've seen grade 3 mast cell tumors.
Oh yeah.
So the grade 3s, they're a grave prognosis. I mean, you're not going to beat those. You remove them surgically.
And to clarify, it's a grade 3 on a scale of 1 to 3.
Yeah.
So it's the highest.
Right.
Just spelled out, yeah.
Thank you for the clarification. Sometimes I just throw this stuff out. And right. Grade 3 is bad. Grade 1 better. Grade 2, so-so. So you got a grade 3 mast cell tumor. It's a skin cancer. And you remove them surgically. Comes back grade 3. Bad prognosis. But the treatment for it is, you know, is an oral chemo that is not very expensive. So why the heck not go for it? You combine that with a steroid. I got it off of Vin. It's a newer protocol. And so treat the dog. And you know what? Without the chemo, this one particular dog would have lived just 1 month post-excision. And he ended up living another 4 months. And just by taking a couple of pills a day, you know, maybe that's worth it. For this old, you know, for this elderly couple who, you know, lived for this dog, for them it was worth it. So, you know, not a huge expense. You're just giving a couple of pills a day. You know, maybe take a look at it, even if it is a grave prognosis. And I think that the best point of your article is it right for your pet? Is it right for you? You know, there's multiple circumstances that you have to take into consideration.
Yeah, and I think the most important thing is feel really comfortable with your vet or your oncologist and trust them because they'll steer you. I mean, okay, yeah, there are some vets who want to take you for every dime you have, and they'll push you and push you and push you and say, oh, you have to do this, you have to do this. I mean, and you know what? If that's the case, maybe get a second opinion because a good oncologist, especially the people who specialize in oncology will be very good at this. But even if it's a regular general practitioner vet like us, I mean, the good ones will have an honest discussion and say, hey, look, I gave my people a whole schedule of the protocol. and say, "This, if you choose to do this, here's what we're up against. And this is the perfect world scenario," which no one ever does. You're always skipping a week because maybe their white count got a little low. Or you're skipping a week because you went on vacation. Or, you know, I mean, there's always something. So, but I think if you get all the facts of what the chemo for your particular cancer is, then you can decide versus just, "Oh, chemo, I don't want it bad. It sounds bad." You know, I mean, get somebody who's really honest, then you trust. And you can say, yeah. And some oncologists will talk you out of it and say, like you're saying, "Well, with the hemangiosarcoma, ooh, chemo will buy you 3 months." Really? You know, I mean, it's not really something you want to push.
Yeah. And then there's the old osteosarcoma, another pretty useless one with chemotherapy. Yeah. And the other thing too is, you know, the treatment for that is basically to amputate the extremity. So it likes to grow on wrists and it likes to grow on knees in certain breeds of dog. And you can even see it in the mouth. It's basically a bone tumor, osteosarcoma. And I actually don't recommend amputation because there's no statistical evidence that really shows it by a significant amount of time. You're usually dealing with an older patient unless it's one of those Rottweilers that gets it at 3 years old. Yeah. So it's very difficult for them to learn how to use three limbs. And then realistically, by the time you're diagnosing it, 85% of the time it's already metastasized or spread to other parts of the body. So, you know, that's a whole other discussion. But just real quick, there was a particular surgeon at Illinois. I'm not going to mention her name, but, you know, back to spending every dime that you possibly have, she was doing what were called limb spare operations. You remember those? Were they still doing that when you were there? I scrubbed in on a few of these, and basically what they're doing is they are cutting away the cancer and then putting in hardware with bone grafting to try to basically regrow the bone that was taken out. So number one, you have a cancer that's already spread. You have a dog trying to regrow bone that's already immune compromised.
An old dog trying to regrow bone.
Right,
yes.
An old dog trying to regrow. Well, they kept funding her grants. I remember there was this one couple that actually remortgaged their house to continue to have these things done to their Rottweiler. And I just thought to myself, leave well enough alone. It hasn't worked. One case has not worked in 3 years. You know, at what point do you say uncle and stop doing this? You know, again, I won't mention her name, but.
Well, and I think too, it might be client demand because people say, "Oh, I don't want to amputate," but you hear about, "Oh, I can save their limb and still feel like I'm doing something." Well, then I want to sign on to that, you know, but
right.
I agree with you. I am all for amputation in young dogs. I actually had a three-legged dog. He lived to be 14. He lost his leg at about 8 weeks. That dog was, he was a lab. He was freaking unbelievable. He pulled me down the street on a leash so hard, but I was just so happy I just let him. I never bothered to train him or care. You know, I mean, it was embarrassing. People were like, "You're a three-legged dog, taking you for a walk." But he did fantastic. But he lost it when he was young, and it was all he knew. I mean, right. The dog jumped up and down off the bed. He was a nut. But he had an old dog who realized the legs they do have are probably arthritic.
Right.
And sore, and they don't have good muscle tone, and then you cut off one of their four wimpy legs, and they don't have a good leg. You know, and it's, and a lot of these, I see these old time vets who do it, and they do not do appropriate pain management. They basically say, "Here, take an Advil. I just cut your leg off. That'll be just fine."
Right.
You know, and
yeah.
It's
maddening. And I agree with you. I don't have qualms about amputation. Amputation because you have an unsalvageable limb. That's more a liability there than it is off is yep. One thing, but a limb that's compromised from an aggressive bone cancer, that to me, you know, to buy a nominal amount of time doesn't make sense, you know, I'm having this discourse with my patients, and I'm just going back to your point where talk to your vet, and if you trust your vet, he's going to give you, or she's going to give you the honest take on it, which is, you know, bottom line is, at this for my dog, I don't think I would be doing this, and I can do it. It doesn't cost me anything. The bottom line, though, is that I'm going to, you know, engage in pain management, immune boosting therapy to help him fight and deal with the cancer. I'm not one of those holistic veterinarians that say, "Oh, I can cure cancer with nutrition," but we can do a lot to help fight it. And I've had a lot of success using things like astaxanthin. Have you ever heard of that one?
No.
It's an antioxidant 6,000 times more potent than vitamin C. It's derived from kelp. Or certain kinds of kelp. It's what makes lobsters and shrimp red.
Oh,
it's a
okay.
Red pigment. It's been isolated. It's found to be a huge immune-boosting therapy. I also do anti-cancer doses of vitamin C, B-complex, and just optimize their nutrition. And that's another thing, you know, and again, a whole other discussion is that side of it where you want to prepare them well for the chemotherapy by, you know, engaging in good nutrition. And that's kind of my holistic side there is I'm going to try to support the patient as much as I can from that to prepare them for it, you know, from that side of it.
Yeah, that's a good point because there's one of the pet food companies actually makes a diet, Hill's. They make science diet. They make a prescription food called ND.
Yes.
It stands for neoplasia diet, and it actually is for patients undergoing chemo.
Right.
So, yeah, which is your same theory, basically. You know, give them as much nutrition as they can. So if there's a deficiency and you're doing chemo, it's like, really, let's not kick them while they're down, you know? So sure. Support them. I mean, again, that's not going to cure the cancer.
Right.
But it makes them a better chemo patient.
Yes, and I think it facilitates the chemotherapy, and I think it increases remission rates. I can't tell you that I've done any studies to prove it, but I will tell you this. I have a lot of anecdotal evidence from case-by-case just observation. I had a dog that had a splenic hemangiosarcoma, and it probably helped that this dog was a mutt, not a golden retriever.
No
but
kidding.
It was a bona fide, no gross metastasis, hemangiosarcoma. Well, you know the life expectancy. They opted against chemotherapy. So I just loaded this dog up on just, you know, nutrition. And that dog lived a year and a half. So if you look at the mean remission rate without chemotherapy, it's 6 months, right, post-surgical about mm-hmm. this dog.
And that's the average, so some live more, some live less.
It's the average, yeah. But to go, you know, a year beyond that with good quality – and all the dog had was this little chronic anemia, you know, that we combated that with Pet Tinic. I love Pet Tinic. I'm a big Pet Tinic fan.
Ooh, see, I'm not.
Mm. No, I think it's really good for anemia cases.
Well, I just don't think they like it.
They don't.
Have you ever tasted it? It's evil in a bottle. If you can't. So, you know, I do the iron injections because it's one shot and you're done versus the owner coming in covered in Pet Tinic going, I couldn't get it in my cat. I don't know why.
Yeah, well, so my Labrador Retriever just loves it.
Really? Oh, yeah. Wow.
He also likes Trifexis. So, you know, okay. Most dogs don't like that either. He's like, give me my Trifexis. You don't see that every day. But at any rate, it does help with anemia. So, you know, it's a multifaceted. There's a lot to think about, and just don't be afraid of it necessarily. Have the discussion, and that's why I love the article because it's a dirty word to a lot of people, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And I tell people, you know what? Just go talk to an oncologist. Just go talk because the place I'm at, I work at a couple of places when I'm not doing house calls, and they don't do chemo. And so I'm like, oh, around here, an oncology consult is, I think, $120. I'm like, here's your blood work. Here's your path report. Go there. It'll be the best $120 you ever spent because even if you don't do chemo, you know that you made an educated decision.
Right.
And that's what matters, you know. But and most people are like, oh, okay, because I tell them, you know, and I tell them how chemo and pet, it's not the vomit your brains out kind of deal like it is in people, you know. And I tell them that I actually have done chemo on my own pet, and that kind of makes them wake up too, I think, and be like, oh, well, she doesn't seem sadistic. So,
right.
You know.
She seems to have gotten into this to help animals, not because you have reckless abandon to hurt them.
and you know, I had one dog who I did not do chemo on because it was a kind of cancer that the chemo was going to be kind of a Hail Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what? I'm not going to do this Hail Mary. It probably won't work. It had a 5% chance of working, or he can just have a good life and we'll just go with it. You know? So again, as a vet, do I always do chemo? No, you make a decision based on your case.
Right. And no case is like another, you know, you can have two lymphoma cases that are night and day from one another. There's maybe mm-hmm. different health considerations and whatnot.
They are.
What's that?
What breed they are is huge.
Oh my goodness, isn't it? Yes, it is. Yeah, it's God. It can make all the difference, honestly. So, great discussion, great article. Vetchick.com. It's also posted at my blog. She, Dr. Karen, guest blogs for us too, and she very kindly gives us the opportunity to post them at WebDVM. But Vetchick.com is where that's posted right now, and I'd really advise giving it a good read. It's an excellent article. just a quick little, was our last episode the TNR one?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. So I wrote an article about it. Did you see it?
I saw it. I'll be honest. I didn't read it though. I'm a bad,
it's quite all right.
Bad co-host.
Quite all right. You know all the information in it. You know why I'm against it, right?
Yes.
But I started.
We all know why you're against it.
Yeah. Right. Right. So I started the article with, let me be clear that I'm not lambasting people that subscribe to it because your heart's in the right place. The intention is there. You're trying to accomplish something in the most humane possible way. I respect that. But here's why I don't think it's a good idea. And blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to retalk the episode, but kind of segueing into maybe the next topic. You wouldn't believe the vitriol that I've gotten directed towards me, directed towards people posting that are pro and against. It is horrible what people are saying about each other.
Is it
about
war?
Me? What's that?
So it's just like war going on?
It is a war going on. It's amazing. It's worse than my Convenia article, and that was really bad. It's like, the Convenia is not the devil. I mean, and then the Trifexis one I did was a lot of vitriol there too. But
yeah,
this one's getting ugly. So do you ever get these discussions on your blog?
Or no,
just, I trigger the trolls, I guess.
Yeah, because I mean, well, maybe I don't have nearly the traffic you do either. I'll be honest, because my blog has been around for not even a year yet.
Yeah.
But people, yeah, if no. I get a comment, it's like, I loved your article, and there's like rainbows and roses, you know. We don't have the meanness.
Yeah, I was called greedy, unethical. I mean, just amazing, and to the extent that I normally just let them just say what they want to say, and I'm like, whatever, you're giving me added content to my site and raising my search engine rankings. Go on, insult me all you like. But this one, I just had to chime in and be like, it's really amazing the generalities you can make about somebody that you've never actually met. And one of them was a CVT. Anyway, I just like to kind of maybe discuss that in a future episode.
Oh boy.
Yeah. just the polarizing nature of some of these topics, like raw feeding. Oh my goodness, that's another bad one.
Well, any feeding topic about food for your pet, I don't know why, but it's like a religion.
Oh my goodness.
And I have some people who will defend whatever, thing they read, whatever it is, like more than they will their religion, it seems. It's crazy. It's like I blasphemed them. If I say, I had a dog who chronic diarrhea. He'd have maybe an almost stool for a week and then 3 weeks of diarrhea. And, and a year of this, and they were insisting on feeding him grain-free food. I was like, there's nothing wrong with grain-free food if it agrees with your dog.
Right.
It does not agree with your dog.
Yeah.
They have two dogs. Your other dog who has nice form stool, it agrees with him.
Right.
That's great.
Not every diet's worth it. Yeah. There's not one dietary strategy that's right for every dog. But people firmly believe that it is.
I know. And I was like, please give your dog some fiber and give it some wheat, please. And and guess what? The dog is living happily ever after. And the owner thinks of a genius.
Well, that's another potential future topic. So, hey, listen, we're laying down some hints of things we may be talking about in the future. So make sure you listen to us in our next episode. It could be very interesting. Bound to be polarizing if we go in either direction there. But the TNR, yeah, it's polarizing. And I posted
I'll have to go check it out. I'm kind of scared to.
Go read it. It's entertaining. And not my post, the comments.
Your post, nobody wants to read that anyway. Yeah,
you know all about that. So I posted the player, though, from our episode on it. So you're implicated. But you're pro TNR, so they're
nice.
They're going to hate you too, because there'll be a half that hates you and a half that hates me. So at least one of us is being loved by someone.
But I was wishy washy because you're against it, and I'm flaky enough that I was like, "Well, there's times it's right and times it's not." So, flakiness is saving my butt, I think, on this one.
We'll see. Maybe you'll want to chime in, make some comments.
Maybe.
Are you brave enough?
Get some haters. I don't know. I don't want haters.
Yeah.
I want love.
It's unavoidable. It's on the internet. It's unavoidable. So anyway, great talk. Good to talk to you again. I was having some Dr. Karen withdrawal there.
I know. It's been too long. I'm like, between both of us losing our voices and everything, yeah. I'm like, this is like some weird fate. I'm starting to wonder.
Well, let's try to get back to weekly. I have a lacrosse tournament I'm coaching in this weekend, so hopefully I don't lose my voice. I will do my best to stay calm on the sideline. But yeah, we'll try to get back to a weekly schedule. Is that going to work for you?
Use gestures instead of yelling. Try gesturing or signs.
I coach high school age boys. They don't pay attention to anything but...
Really? Interpretive dance in the sideline?
Interpretive dance. I'll work on that. In fact, yes. Practice is tomorrow. I'm going to do some interpretive dance, see how my 9th and 10th graders respond to that.
Yes, fabulously. I'm here. Yeah.
I like it. I'm going to have you on my lacrosse podcast. That's next.
Yeah.
Well, have a great evening. And
thanks for listening, guys. Or I'm sorry. I don't know which I should say on this one. It went downhill quickly.
Oh, it is always a pleasure. Have a great evening, Dr. Karen. Everybody else, have a lovely evening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.